There was a word the judge used in Sam's trial back in 2011. He used it to describe her victims, the childless couple.
Because their natural and unfulfilled desire was to have children, your victims were particularly vulnerable.
Vulnerable. Sam targeted people who were vulnerable, ripe for fooling. This was often because something was going on in their lives that made her think they could be exploited. And the judge in England wasn't the only one to use the word vulnerable when describing Sam's targets. Almost everyone we interviewed, at some point in the interview, used the word.
She knows the vulnerable. The single mothers, vulnerable mothers with disabled children.
She did a fantastic job in gaining my trust. She was preying on us at our most vulnerable.
Vulnerable. And you know what? Sam even used the word herself when we interviewed her as Carrie Jade.
Instead of just trying to sell vulnerable people.
She was talking about fake health treatments.
I think they're just taking vulnerable people and selling a lie.
I'm Justine Stafford. From RTE Documentary on One, this is The Real Carrie Jade. Episode 3. I'm Lucy Fitzwilliams. At the end of episode 2, you heard how it was early 2014 and Sam just had her third child removed from her in Ireland and given to foster parents. This was while the Irish authorities dealt with the question of custody. You'll recall that Sam's second baby had already been given into the care of its father by social services in the UK. In early 2014, without her two children, she went to a town called Tullamore in the Midlands of Ireland in County Offaly and stayed in a local hotel for a month without paying. We know all of this because of a court report in the local paper, The Offaly Topic. It says she was found guilty of defrauding the hotel of €700. The paper said that when she checked in...
She told staff her landlord would pay the cost because her apartment had flooded, but that wasn't true. And she left without paying and didn't return to pay the bill. Her solicitor said that his client wasn't well at the time, and if she had been, she wouldn't have done that. He said that she had recently been diagnosed with a medical condition, which interfered with her acting properly as she usually would. She is now being treated by a psychologist in Dublin.
Her solicitor told the court that Samantha Cooks was now on social welfare and didn't realise how much she owed. He also told the court...
She left all of her possessions behind.
And that's an important point. It'll come up later, again and again. During 2014, Samantha stayed around Tullamore. And it was in another hotel in the town that she met an English woman and her husband. They were looking for an au pair. They'd found Samantha online, except Samantha wasn't the name the prospective au pair was using.
Her name was Lucy Hart. We arranged for an interview there in Tullamore.
The English woman is Layla.
Well, it was just literally a coffee, and I think my husband felt a bit left out because it was just me and her, and we were chatting away because obviously I'm from England and she's from England, and she was extremely chatty, and then she was explaining, you know, that she'd been working here, there and everywhere. She'd been working in Dubai and she'd worked with autistic children, and she was just lovely. She was literally lovely. I don't know, she was like a Mary Poppins.
After interviewing this Lucy in the Tullamore Hotel, Layla was really impressed.
My husband and myself, we stood outside and we just said, what do you think? And the two of us just went, yeah, let's offer the job. I never ever asked for references, and I never even asked for a passport, which, you know, now I'm kicking myself, but yeah, I just took it at her word, to be honest. You just don't think that somebody as sweet as she comes across, you just don't think that she would be a pathological liar, to be honest.
Sam moved into the family home and began caring for three of their children, aged 2, 5, and 10. Layla knew that this Lucy had strong Christian beliefs and was a regular churchgoer. For the first few weeks, she lived up to Layla's first impressions of her as a kind of Mary Poppins, the perfect nanny.
Yeah, everything was great. Yeah, she fitted straight in. The girls liked her. The girls liked her bubbly personality. The girls were looked after as well as I could see anyway, from obviously I was working full-time and so was my husband.
But then things began to change.
I just tried to see the good in her, but my husband, he's got a bit of a suspicious mind about him, if you like. And everything that we as a family would be interested in, then she had either knew somebody or she'd done it or something like that, to try and create a conversation. She would try and find things to be interesting about.
One of those things, for example, was when she said that her family had a business in industrial diamonds, just like she had told us.
We had a family business that was in diamond cutting abrasives.
Yes, her mother was in the States. She was the creator of sandpaper for B&Q.
And then Sam talked about another business her mother had and its involvement in the new world of electric vehicles and how all of these cars relied on one particular part.
And my husband was like, this just doesn't work. He just went on, he just started Googling B&Q, he just started Googling sandpaper, he just started Googling smart cars. He's a bit like that, is my husband. He's like, nah, if it doesn't ring true, it's not real.
So Layla and her husband decided to bring these inconsistencies up with Sam.
He just called her out on it. And when my husband had gone to work, she came back downstairs and she was in tears. And it was, to me, it was a case of, I feel like I've just been interrogated. I was like, no, not at all. I said, my husband's just got questions and he just wants answered. It's like, that's all. I said, we don't really know a lot about you. So we're just asking the questions. And then she stopped her crying and went back upstairs.
By December, she was still with them.
Christmas presents where we were all meant to go on a 3-day trip to Euro Disney, but it was all on A4 paper with colouring, like something that children would draw you. There was no booking form, there was no, this is your name, there was nothing. It was just an A4 sheet of paper that was coloured in with Euro Disney on it. And then there was the other one that was the two younger girls had a little colored seal, and the two of them used to fight over it, apparently. So then she decided she was going to take them to County Clare on a boat ride to watch the seals and the dolphins. And that was, again, on an A4 sheet of paper that was coloured in. We let that slide.
They let it slide because they felt they didn't really have a choice.
We needed her. There was literally just me and my husband, and the two of us working full time. So it was a case of we needed somebody to take the kids to school and be there for when they got home.
Sam wasn't just helping with the children. She said she could also help with the family's financial worries. Layla and her family were renting, and it was putting them to the pin of their collar. They were vulnerable, and Sam saw this. She said she had contacts in her church who could help.
And she said, I know that they have a house and they are not asking for as much money. She says, let me have a chat with them and I'll see if we can move you in there. Like, she told us where the house was, and me and my husband, we were driving past this house. We could see the house. It looked lovely. It was a big house just outside of Maynooth. And then we just happened one day to, there was a guy standing in the garden. And we were tempted to go and say to him, you know, are you like the gardener, or we're moving in here, do you know anything? But I'm pleased we didn't. We would look like right idiots. But anyway, so we didn't think any more of it. We just kept on our word. Look, can you ask the guy from church, can we go and view the place? And she was all, oh yeah, they're busy today. There was always an excuse. And then one particular day, she was actually in the car with us. And we happened to go past the house and we were like, oh, do you think now we're in Maynooth, you could possibly give them a call and just let them know that we're all actually here? And she was like, oh, yeah, let me think about it. Oh, I just need to use the bathroom. Could we go to Tesco so that I could use the bathroom? And I'm like, yeah, that's no problem.
When they got to Tesco, Layla and her husband stayed in the car while Sam and two of their children went inside.
And then all of a sudden, my girls come running down the stairs, like running towards the car. And they told me that Lucy has collapsed. And I'm like, oh. And they goes, yeah, she's fainted. She's in the shop. They've got her a chair. So I got out the car. I came upstairs into the shop. And I'm like, are you okay? And she's like, yeah, I just don't think I've eaten. And I just feel a bit faint. And I was like, oh, okay. So anyway, we got her back downstairs in the car. And I'm like, I said, look, I know you're not feeling too well, but is there still any chance that we could go out to the house? And she's like, Layla, I just want to go home. I'm not feeling too great. So then we had to go home because, there was no house.
The same thing happened with their family car. It was old and costing them money.
There was another guy in the church. He was apparently emigrating. and he didn't need his car. So it was like, yeah, there's a cheap car going there. So we were like, yep, great, that's perfect. We'll just buy this little car off your friend. And the same thing, we called up the scrapyard. They came and they collected our car, put it onto the back of the truck, and there was no car.
No car and no house. And just in case you're thinking you'd never fall for anything Sam said, remember how totally convincing her lies can be. Like the one she told us about her fiancé.
Oh, Fionn. What do we say about Fionn? He's a lovely man.
Even if you're told again and again that she's making these things up, she tells such good stories so well that you get drawn in.
We met through a church group. He had a little boy that died.
It's only human.
And then when I got my diagnosis, I mean, gosh, everyone in the hospital just presumed we were together because he'd just be in all the time.
Shortly after Layla had been left careless and almost homeless, Sam went off, disappeared really.
She said she was going on a writer's retreat. She borrowed one of our holdalls, said that she was only going for a few days, and then we never seen her ever again.
But Layla wasn't finished with Sam and her life. When she thought she was getting another house in Maynooth, she'd given her landlord notice. So now, they had to move and she had to clear out the house. Except, the room that Sam had slept in was locked.
She had the only key. That's when we decided to pop the lock and we went in and, you know, it was just a normal room. And there was a few things, a few bottles of spray, moisturizer, stuff like that, as if she was coming back. And then we started clearing the wardrobes out. And then that's when I found lots of paperwork.
Again, part of the pattern you saw from the hotel in Tullamore, when Sam flees, she leaves things behind.
Lots of scribblings, lots of writings, lots of shopping lists. And then that's when I found the little book of index cards.
Some of the notes Layla found in the room, Sam had written earlier in 2014. That was when she was preparing to go to court and plead in the custody case to keep her baby, her third child, who was born here in Ireland. Layla read comments Sam made about being a fit mother, well able to mind her baby, her mental health, and about the support she said she was getting from her family. But there was one comment Sam wrote in a notebook that really shocked Layla. Sam was writing about the death of her first child, Martha, back in 2008. This was when the coroner found that Martha had died of accidental suffocation from a pillow. Sam wrote,
I stand shoulder to shoulder with the coroner that I didn't murder my daughter.
I stand shoulder to shoulder with the coroner that I did not murder my daughter.
I was sitting on the end of the bed and I never forget it. My husband was in the wardrobe and he was clearing the clothes out. And honest to God, my blood just ran cold, literally cold.
And of course, Layla never knew that her au pair had any children, let alone one who had died suddenly.
And that's just when, who the F have we had working for us?
For the next 12 months, Sam Cooks disappeared. The next time she hit the radar was in January 2016. This is Dunleary Evangelical Church in Dublin. Sam turned up here in January 2016, still using the name Lucy, but a different surname. Meet Lucy Fitzwilliams.
She told us that she came from United Emirates and she'd been out there with her husband and child and she lost them both within a week. I thought, oh, how could you recover from that?
How did she lose them both?
He had got some disease and I think she got the same thing. I don't know.
One of the worshippers in the church who met Sam is Carol Burrell and she's telling our producer Ronan how she was an ideal target for Sam's lies.
I'm very gullible. I accept everything anybody tells me.
When she told you the story, how did you react?
Cried. I cried in the car. I cried in the car. I thought that I was bringing her to Dalkey because she was going to collect these three children from school. And I said, I live in Dalkey. Do you want me to give you a lift?
Sam said she was a childminder for three children in Dalkey, one of the most affluent areas in Dublin.
When we met her, she said she, oh, such a cock and bull story. She said that she was walking down the street one day and she met this lady, and the lady said to her, "Do you want a job minding my three children?" And she got a job minding three children.
Sam joined Carol and all her friends at the church's women's group.
Oh, we all thought she was lovely. We thought she was really lovely, but she was going to write a book. And she was waiting for it to be published. It was available in Tesco. So we were always looking in Tesco's window to see was there a book advertised by Lucy.
Carol came home to her daughter, Sharon, telling her about this new woman who she'd met at church.
I suppose really from the beginning, I was starting to find everything quite far-fetched. It was just like she was really preying, I could see, on that group, who were a very warm group of women, and they were very welcoming and very kind to her. But there just seemed to be kind of one sob story after another. And I could see that she was manipulating my mom really from the beginning. So I was very cautious. And she definitely wanted to manipulate the group. And she honed in very quickly on the most vulnerable member of that group.
Here's the word vulnerable again. A new target for Sam. This woman Sam was now focusing on was vulnerable. Vulnerable because of a recent tragedy.
And she really honed in on this person and really unsettled her.
Oh, so she would keep going over to talk to her at gatherings.
And she was just very friendly, not just in church, but, you know, outside. They were very close for the short time. She definitely caused some kind of crisis in that woman's life, you know? So it seemed to be more that she was feeding off that feeling of being in control over people and having, you know, being able to manipulate. That seemed to be more the rush that she was getting from it.
The rush, like a gambler's rush. Is this what Sam feels when she's got a victim in her sights? Singling out someone affected by tragedy appears to be the part of Sam's modus operandi. It gives her a way into that person's life. While Sam was attending the church in Dublin in early 2016, she also met a local hairdresser named Lorraine.
She got her hair done with me. I befriended her. She's very, like, plausible, lovely person, came across as being amazing.
Sam used the name Lucy with Lorraine too and told her that she was an expert in child therapy, that she was the child of a millionaire and that she was providing support for abused women.
She was opening this women's refuge. I said that I would, by all means, help as much as I could with doing maybe manicures, pedicures, stuff like that. She said, no, I'd really like you on board as a paid person, as a job.
As you've guessed by now, there was no women's refuge. But, of course, the only person to know this was Sam. She set up a committee for this new business around abused women and brought Lorraine on board.
And I went to the house to do training. There was four people in the house, and the wedding planner, she was planning a wedding in the church in Dunleary.
This wedding planner was supposedly planning Sam's wedding to another imaginary fiancé. Lorraine was useful to Sam, not because she was vulnerable, but because she had a huge network of contacts. And some of those contacts Lorraine had were women with children with extra needs. Lorraine introduced Sam to one of these women and she worked with her child.
She would still say, like, that she did marvellous work with her child.
As a result, Lorraine passed Sam's name around to others in her group of friends and acquaintances.
One by one, I introduced them to this girl.
The main way Sam gets into people's lives is through their children, childcare. And that was her way into her next victim's life, Lynn, a single mother of two daughters. Daisy, Lynn's youngest daughter, was born with a genetic disorder that severely affected the way her brain developed.
Daisy's BiPAP.
She even had difficulty breathing.
That gives her enough pressure in her lungs to take a full breath. It also takes the CO2.
In 2016, Daisy was just 2 years old when Lynn was introduced to Sam. Sam gave Lynn the imaginary story of her setting up a women's refuge in South County Dublin. And this resonated with Lynn because she had used a refuge before. Lynn knew the area well where Sam's refuge was supposed to be.
It never crossed my mind that I never saw it, because women's refuges are set up so that other people don't see where it is. We had been through that system, so straight away I had empathy for this person.
The next story that Sam presented to Lynn was that she was planning a very special trip to see Santa in Lapland. Lynn was keen for her older daughter to go along.
When you have a sick child and other children, you do everything in your power to try and make life for the sibling a little bit easier, because they miss out on everything. And as a single parent, she has missed out on so much in life. So when somebody comes to you with a proposal and with something that's achievable, you grab it with both hands.
Not only that, Sam told Lynn that her mother could join her on this once-in-a-lifetime trip to Lapland.
My mum has dreamt since Lapland existed in kids' minds, and she had six kids. My mum always dreamt about going to Lapland. Whether she had us in that dream or not, mum wanted to go to Lapland. She was so excited.
Are you beginning to see a pattern here? Sam chooses her victims based on the circumstances of their lives. This often involves childcare, and where a family finds itself in difficulty for one reason or another. And then Sam offers them hope. A new house, a new car, and this time it was a Christmas trip to the North Pole.
And mum went and bought her snowsuits and gave us the money to buy all of our equipment. There was such a lovely buzz about it.
We don't need to tell you the Lapland trip was another imaginary creation by Sam. But for everyone else, it was absolutely real. And Lynn wasn't her only victim.
Can we have Domino's pizza?
Has Mummy ever bought Domino's pizza?
Yes.
When?
Another was Hillary.
26th of December.
What year?
2018.
Whose young son, Reese, has additional needs.
Domino's. Yeah, say please.
And
please,
I haven't
please.
Bought it since.
Reese has ADD, autism, ODD, defiance disorder, SPD, sensory processing disorder, and ADHD, the hyper disorder.
Amongst many things, this often means that Reese is prone to meltdowns.
A meltdown is when a child can't cope with life. It could be something so simple as the food. It could be something so simple as a shopping centre, a ceiling being too high, noise. They hit you, they bite you, they scrape you, they beat you up, they smash things. Reese went through about 8 tablets he did, all with covers, screen protectors. He smashed them up, he smashed remote controls, he hurt himself, he self-harmed himself after he'd beaten me up. He was very, very confused, hurt, and we had no help. So he was in a system, he was on a piece of paper, but it's 9 months for this and 9 months for that and 9 months for the other, and there was nowhere I could turn.
You can hear how Hillary really needed help, especially when she wasn't getting enough from official sources. So, when her friend Lorraine, the hairdresser, mentioned that she knew someone, a therapist, who might be able to help Reese, it was like a gift from the gods. And Sam Cooks was about to meet her next victim.
One weekend, Reese had a big meltdown and he couldn't cope. I couldn't cope. And I rang Lorraine and I said, Lorraine, I says, I need that girl, Lucy. Can you just get me her number? And she said, yeah, no problem. So she gave me her number. I rang her and Lucy said, I'll come out on Saturday.
By now, Sam was describing herself as an occupational therapist. But it soon became clear to Hillary that this therapist she was paying hadn't a clue how to deal with a child like Reese.
I went down to Glenageary, I did. I picked her up at 10 o'clock in the morning and, knocked on the door. She came out and she goes, oh, just give me a minute. I just need to get my box of tricks. This box of tricks was a plastic bucket with a lot of things that children would play with and things like that. But the whole time Reese was trying to get into our box of tricks and she kept saying, no, you can't go near that until I tell you. Until I allow you to go near that, you're not allowed to go near it. She kept telling him, and she thought that she could teach him space and time. You know what I mean?
What would a normal occupational therapist do in a situation like
that? Well, they certainly wouldn't do that, make a child wait. You know, they certainly would not do that. They can't wait. Reese has no capability of waiting. So we sat here and then eventually she said, oh yes, we'll do something now. So she went to the box of tricks and she took out colours And I was horrified because Reese has no pincher grip. So your pincher grip is where you pegs and pencil. So when he holds a pencil, it physically hurts him. The act of holding a pencil hurts him, right? So she hands him colour and pencils and he looks at them and he tried to do it to impress her and he just flung them across the table. And she goes, oh, oh. And then Reese was starting to get really agitated and he really wanted to go outside. So I said, can we go outside? He said, yeah, yeah. She said, we'll bring him outside. And I said, he has to go on his scooter now because he has to shake it off. So he has to start stemming on his scooter.
Stemming
is when he flaps. He kind of needs to regulate himself. He needs to kind of come down off being penned in and made sit down and made colour and made do this stopping and waiting and not go near the box. So he needed to shake it off. So he'd get up on his scooter and he'd go up and he'd go as fast as he possibly could around the estate and just go, go, go. And she said, is he flight risk? I said, yeah, he's full flight risk. So she said, should I run after him? And I went, yeah, you should run after him. So she was running up and down the estate after Reese because we have the Lewis outside. So he's high risk to go across those tracks and not care and not understand whether the Lewis is going to kill him or not. So she's running around the estate and I'm kind of going, what are they doing? Like,
Hillary was about ready to give up on this therapist. And looking back now, it's possible that Sam twigged this. So how was she going to address the problem of getting found out this time? She'd tell more lies, this time about a trip her fiancé, the local church pastor, was supposedly organising.
We're going to Lapland and it's going to be subsidised. And I went, oh? And she said, yeah. She said, like, you know, it's only like €350 for an adult and €250 for a child. And I'm like, oh, that sounds brilliant. I'd actually turn into a Christian. I'd leave my religion just to get on that plane. And she goes, but because you know me, you're more than welcome. I went, are you for real? And she goes, yeah, 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 you can come. Like, you and Reese can absolutely come. Like, you can definitely come. And Lorraine's going to come. And I'm like, Lorraine's going? And then everybody was coming. Then it was like, Lynn's coming and this one's coming. And she said, yeah, yeah, anybody who has special needs can more than well, anybody who's in bad situations, they can all come.
As well as running a refuge and working as a therapist and organising a trip to Lapland, Sam, as I've said, was also planning a wedding and renovating a house that she was going to move into with her new husband. Hillary and Lorraine never actually got to meet Sam's fiancé, but they did get to see the new house.
There was builders at the house. Genuinely, there was builders.
Yeah.
She pointed the house out and there was builders at the house. Every now and then she'd say, oh, I'm just with the builders, or oh, I'm just with the PA, and oh, I'm just with the wedding planner.
For Lorraine, she was the person who had introduced Lucy to Lynn and Hillary.
Like, I still believed everything, right? Like, we had brought loads of stuff up to the house.
For the refuge, the women's refuge, she'd tell us that somebody needs a buggy, somebody needs tins of tomatoes, toiletries, sanitary wear.
It's laughable now, but it's not.
And the trip to Lapland was coming together.
And all she needed was the deposit and the photograph of the passport. A friend of mine, she's an accountant, and I said it to her, and she was coming on the trip, she was. And she was after inviting her sister, and she was after ringing Lucy and confirming with Lucy that her sister and her friends were coming. And there was about 20 or 30 of them, there was. And they all had got the money together. And there was about 20 grand. Now, they knew that Lucy had charity status or was in the middle of applying for charity status, and all that girl needed was the charity number. So I'm now at August Bank Holiday Weekend 2016. Now, that day, my friend had been trying to ring her and couldn't get in touch with her. And she said, Hillary, I've got this 20 grand check. I can't get in touch with Lucy. What am I going to do? She said, all I need is that charity number before I hand over this check. And I said, oh, I don't know. Like, you know, I can't get in touch with her. I don't know what's happening. Maybe leave it until Sunday or something like that, the weekend, or maybe Monday. Maybe she's in the women's refuge. She doesn't answer the phone when she's in the refuge. And I got this frantic phone call. And it was Lucy. And Lucy said to me, Hillary, quickly, you have to help me. And I said, what the hell is wrong with you? She said, I'm after collapsing in the middle of Easons in Dunleary. and two ambulance drivers are after bringing me in. I went, in where? And she says, I'm in Vincent's Hospital. I went, oh my God, you're in the hospital. And she said, yeah, come and get me. I hate hospitals. You have to come down here and get me. And she said, I don't know anybody here. So I said, okay, Grant. Drove down, went to the reception, said to the girl, hiya, I'm here to pick up Lucy Fitzwilliams. And then she goes, Lucy Fitzwilliams, Lucy, Lucy. Nope. Lucy Williamson. Lucy Williamson. Nope. Lucy Fitz, I don't know. Just try Lucy. And she goes, nope, nobody here by the name of Lucy. Tell me the circumstances. I said, she collapsed in the middle of Easton, she did, and she was brought in by arms. Ah, Samantha, she says, cubicle tree. I went, what? Oh, it doesn't matter, cubicle tree. So I expected to go in to cubicle tree, pull back the curtain, see a stranger there sitting on the bed. Whether that be a male or a female, I didn't know, but I knew that if I pulled back the curtain, that I was going to see somebody that I didn't know. So I pulled back the curtain, and there was Lucy sitting on the bed, and she goes, Hillary! And I went, Lucy? She goes, the girl on the desk has just had to call you by a different name. And she goes, oh my God, get me out of here, get me out of here. Oh, I have to go.
Lucy, Samantha, Claudia. Coming up, Rebecca, the real Carrie Jade, episode 4. I'm Rebecca Fitzgerald.
I said, I don't know who you are. And I said, I am certainly not speaking to you until you speak to the Gardaí. But not till then. She broke down and she said, you're frightening me now, she said. And I said, have you kids? And she said, yes.
If you've any knowledge of Samantha Cooks, a.k.a. Carrie Jade Williams, Sadie Harris, Lucy Fitzwilliams or Rebecca Fitzgerald, please contact us immediately and in confidence by email to documentaries@rte.ie or on any of the RTE Documentary on One social media platforms. The Real Carrie Jade is narrated by myself, Justine Stafford. Music is composed by Fergal O'Connor and performed by Fergal and Tony O'Flaherty. The sound engineer is Ruth Kennington. The series is produced by Ronan Kelly and Liam O'Brien, with the team from RTE Documentary on One.